Today on the podcast, I'm bringing on a new co-host, Matt Kirk. He's a big fan of stats and a data nerd like me, so now you get two baseball brains on the show. Today we'll talk injuries and recoveries, the most dropped and added players of the second week of the season, streaming pitchers, and the death of the quality start and win. That's today on Fastball Fantasy Baseball.
I'm Taylor Tarter, and this is Fastball Fantasy Baseball. Let's get into it.
Coronavirus!
The Nats have been managing COVID cases within the team. John Lester, Josh Harrison, Kyle Schwarber, and Josh Bell, they've all been out. And Schwarber and Bell, they're the most rostered out of all those guys. And, you know, again, don't want to downplay COVID, the severity of COVID, but we hope all these guys are all right. But, you know, we're talking fantasy, the fantasy impact of you know, Kyle Schwarber, Josh Bell being out, is that could have potentially cost people first round matchups. These are big, you know, home run hitting guys. And that could have been, something that affected a lot of people winning their first week. And then you got a guy like JD Martinez who goes on the COVID IL for like 6 hours or whatever and comes off. And it was, he had a cold but they put him on the COVID list, and people going to the game thinking, all right, well, he's going to be out. So they sit him, only to find out that he comes back and hits three home runs against the Orioles. So, you know, this is one of those situations where there's no like set time for no minimum stay on the COVID list. And, you know, JD, to talk about him real quick, he's having a much better season than last year. He's one of those guys who, kind of preached about in-game video and how much that meant to him and how much it helped him, and not having that last season seemed to have affected him. And I'm of the mindset that with in-game video now, we're going to see, a bit of a resurgence back to his norm. I don't know if he's going to hit like 320 again, and 35 home runs.
Yeah, I don't know if those days are behind him at this point, given, the lineups changed a little bit in Boston and, he's gotten a little bit older. But, we're not going to see 2020 JD Martinez from here on out. I think we're going to see a much more improved JD big time.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to get like a 30-plus home run 280 season. And that puts him in like the top 50 players easily. Teoscar Hernandez, he's another guy who is kind of in the same boat. Like we're kind of waiting to see if he has COVID and waiting for that negative test. Does he have a cold? What's going on?
Hopefully you kind of, as the season progresses and more guys are signing up to get the shots, like we won't hopefully have to worry about this too much in the near future. Temporarily, what we're living with right now is, these sort of curious, odd cases where you have guys mysteriously on and off lists,
Yeah, and to kind of talk about the shots, like we're going to see guys get the shot and then sit out the next day probably, a lot, because from experience, it can really knock you out.
Yep, me too, man. Yeah. Do not work the day after you get your shot.
No, made that mistake. But with Teoscar Hernandez out, you got a guy like Randall Grichuk who's been just crushing, and I say, ride that wave while it lasts.
Yeah.
So let's take a minute and look at a few injuries and recoveries from last week.
Ouch, baby. Very ouch.
Arizona second baseman Ketel Marte is on the 10-day IL with a hamstring strain. It's a real bummer for Marte owners. He was off to a great start. Another one of those guys who had a really bad 2020. If you played your cards right and snagged him, you're happy this year so far. Then you have Orioles outfielder Austin Hayes, who's coming back from a hamstring injury. So with the O's, you have kind of a bit of a crowded outfield. Santander seems safe as like a full-time guy. But what order do you put the rest of the O's outfielders? So you have Mountcastle, Mullins, and Hayes. Mountcastle striking out 40% of the time right now. You know, he's not looking great. Lots of medium contact, a lot of decline in his plate discipline metrics. His swinging strike rate is up as well from last year. And then on the other hand, you have somebody like Mullins, who's taking walks. He's not striking out that much. He has a good launch angle for like a guy who you see is more of a speed guy. You know, he's got the launch angle. He's got the good contact numbers. And he's, you know, it looks like he can hit home runs. His plate discipline numbers are some of the best in his career. And then we have Hayes, who had a pretty solid spring training, but he's been out, so the sample size is much smaller. Where do you stand on that outfield?
Well, personally, I'm a big-time Austin Hayes truther. I did get burned on him last year because he, as most of us know here, he's often injured, right? But he's got really great stats against righties. And in a fantasy sense, Austin Hayes could really fit in very well to your lineup in a platoon sense. If you look back at how he's hit against righties since 2019, when he had a pretty decent year, his first real good year, he's hitting .317 against righties with an .872 OPS. And obviously, biggest knock is his health. So fractured rib last year, cut his season in half. And of course, now he's got the hamstring injury. And there's no real set timetable for his return. But if he's healthy, I think he has the highest ceiling of the three guys that you mentioned. And with that said, I would probably say Mullins, Hayes, and Mountcastle. That's how I'd rank them.
Yeah, I am flipped with Mountcastle and Hayes, but I see Mullins as the most valuable one. You know, that Orioles lineup has some sneaky value there. I think, you know, for a team that's probably going to finish around 100 losses, you know, at least on the offensive side, there are some valuable pieces. I feel kind of the same about like Texas too. I think there's some value there that is getting overlooked because it's kind of like an overall bad team.
Right. But I think what the O's also have going for them is, you know, that division, a lot of great stadiums to hit in.
Yep.
You know, whereas Globe Life Park in Texas, I think we're still trying to figure out, you know, is that a hitter's ballpark? Is it a pitcher's ballpark? You know, but I'm with you. I think that offense can produce runs as well.
Another player that's coming back from injury is Sonny Gray. He could be pitching for the Reds potentially on Friday. He had a really good 2019, solid 2020. The strikeout rate's gone up since joining the Reds rotation. He is like a Trevor Bauer disciple with spin rate. And, you know, I kind of picked up on it. He did like a podcast with CC Sabathia where he talked about it, and I saw that. And then I started kind of like digging in and looking, and that made me like really get into Sonny Gray.
Yeah.
You think he's a rest of season top 20, 15, top 10, or do you think he's outside of that?
Well, I have a distinct love for Sonny Gray, and I really do have you to thank for that. Your digging really inspired me to look into him as well. That R2C2 podcast interview with him is a must listen for anybody who's interested in Sonny Gray. You know, I think when he got out of New York, and he talks about this on the podcast, you know, there was a lot of pressure on him there. And then he arrives in Cincinnati. It's a little easier media to handle. And gets involved with Trevor Bauer and Driveline. And it really took his game to another level. But I do have a little bit of concern with Sonny. And first thing is, based off of last year, he's been giving up some hard contact. He's done a really good job suppressing that with ground balls. But it does concern me, as well as this injury, right? So always very cautious with lower back injuries with pitchers. They have a tendency to linger And you have to be really cautious with that, right? But that's not to say I wouldn't take a flyer on him for sure. I'm in on Sonny Gray this year. Wouldn't surprise me if he finds himself as a top 20 guy by the end of the year.
I think the strikeouts are going to propel him there. You have a couple other guys here. Josh Donaldson is off the IL. So let's say he's a free agent in your league. You know, somebody just got frustrated. It's another injury. You know, I'm done with this dude. Yeah. Right? Are you picking him up in your league? Because for me, I would stay away just because the last 4 years, you know, he has not been able to stay healthy.
Yeah. So this is a guy that I wouldn't have drafted necessarily on draft day. But if I find myself in a scenario right now where you're kind of fair to middling in third base and corner infield, you know, maybe you have a guy like Gio Urshela or Miguel Sano, Austin Riley, Yuli Gurriel, any of these guys, and you see the bringer of rain is on the waiver wire. In my opinion, that's a guy that you take a chance on, because when he does play and in that lineup, he will produce. And if he gets hurt again, you throw him on the IL and then you go and pick up your Austin Riley or Gene Segura or whoever's still available to you. So that's how I would go about it. I love that guy.
Another player who has some positive news, who's still injured, but Noah Syndergaard threw a live batting practice session over the weekend. He looks like he's coming back soon. Still not sure when, probably summertime. Is this the time to stash him if he's available? Are you investing are you investing if you can, or does the injury history worry you with him?
Well, I mean, Thor carries a lot of clout with his name. So obviously he's owned in a pretty significant amount of leagues already. 65% ESPN, 76% Yahoo. There's going to be some bumps along the way. He's going to have control issues when he returns, as is the case with anybody coming off an injury like that. But if you can ride that out and you find yourself in the second half of the season and he has it figured out, well, then you got yourself, you know, an ace. He's going to have some inning limits, unfortunately. But the other thing that you might be able to pull off here is a guy like Thor. Again, he has that weight to his name. Trading him at the deadline to somebody looking to compete and then upgrading a separate area of your lineup would be a pretty pro move. You just have to put the time in, really, to pull that off.
Yeah, I mean, even now, if you have him rostered, like all this news, the good news about him, you know, throwing 97 miles an hour and stuff like that is, you know, now might be a good time to sell high. You know, you don't even need to wait until a couple months from now. But in regards to the innings limit, you know, maybe he won't be on an innings limit depending on when he comes back, because there just might not be that many innings left in the season for him.
That's true. So
they might just, you know, let him go. Maybe like within a game, but we'll kind of see with that. Then the last kind of big one here, Fernando Tatis, the injury obviously is worrying. You know, this is an injury, and you know, Stefania Bell on ESPN has talked about it, and plenty of people have written about it, that this is the type of injury that can come back over and over. Right. And this is something that's affected him before. They're saying he could come back at, you know, after the 10 days. What are your thoughts on Tatis going forward? And I mentioned this last week. I've had shoulder surgery. It's a different injury.
Yeah.
You know, but I had a torn labrum, and it's, you know, it's never the same. And I'm sure people who have had like knee surgeries and whatever, hip surgeries, can tell you the same thing, that, you know, it's never going to be 100% again.
Yeah.
For me, I'm staying away. I don't have him rostered anywhere. I'm very injury averse.
Uh-huh.
So what are you thinking?
Like, so like my perspective on that is, you know, this is an opportunity, right? However, I'm a guy who's never had shoulder surgery, and really my lack of experience in that field has me feeling like, you know, you got to jump on this, right? My stock market obsessed friends would say, you got to buy the dip, you know? There's a chance here. You can grab a generational talent for pennies on the dollar. If you find that owner in your league who is really concerned, it's obviously a roll of the dice. I'll admit that I'd be more motivated to do this in a keeper league or a dynasty league rather than a redraft. But it would be absolutely bananas if the Padres, knowing all the information ahead of time, put him out onto the field without any assurances that there wouldn't be long-term damage. And like you said, there's reports that he might come back on Friday. So that alone has me feeling pretty confident that he would be looking pretty good. But if you had Tatis, what would you be looking to trade him, or would you want to hold?
I think I would probably look to trade. I would see what I could get, but it would have to be really the right deal. It would depend, you know, the league type.
Yeah.
Like if it's a keeper dynasty, or if it's a redraft, he's gone.
Oh yeah, he should be off your roster in some trade form. Already. Yeah.
The thing that worries me though, that to like put this in context a little bit, is they knew Lamet had some issues, and they, you know, they didn't hold him back in spring. They wanted to push him out there. Clevinger came in last season, and they threw him out there knowing that there were elbow issues, and he ended up having Tommy John. Yeah. I'm worried that they're just like, we have to win, we have to win, and they're throwing him out there, and they're like, you know, we'll see. So
you might be right, but to me it just seems like you just gave this guy $340 million for 14 years. Like, you have to like make the right decision here, you know?
Yeah. Yep. So lots of fantasy managers tend to overreact with, you know, what happens early in the season. So let's take a look at the most dropped and added players after the first week.
I lift things up and put them down.
Cincinnati outfielder Tyler Naquin is getting added a lot after a crazy good start to the season. He's on fire. He's been getting playing time with Akiyama and Winker being out. Historically, he's been slightly better against righties, but what he's doing now looks legit. The walks are up, the strikeouts are down. The BABIP is at 250, so you know this isn't, you know, an inflated 400, 500 BABIP early in the season that a lot of other guys have right now. For a guy with a 52% ground ball rate and an 8-degree launch angle, he is cranking some home runs. And, you know, there are some good things. The 61% hard contact rate. The bad sign is the home run to fly ball rate is way, way, way high. 62.5%. That's gonna come down to like 20%. So I think long-term, if he gets continued playing time, I think a 280 is realistic right now. You know, obviously that could change if the strikeout rate goes up, whatever. The home run rate is obviously going to tail off. What do you do? If you picked him up, are you hanging on to him? Are you looking to trade him while his value's high? What's your game plan with him? Are you picking him up?
Again, it kind of depends on your outfield situation, but he's got a great opportunity right now with those injuries to Akiyama and Winker. But for me, this is a case where you just got to ride this horse until he quits, right? So you look at a guy like Naquin, and he toiled in a Cleveland lineup for a few years that was positively desperate for someone to look good in the outfield. And then they quit on him. But the surge of Cincinnati might be legit. And if that's the case, I don't see that you get the same production in return for him in a trade. I think what you have here is you just got to ride the guy while he's hot. When those guys return from injury, that lineup, you know, that outfield returns, you know, some pretty good ball players, and that's going to be hard to crack the lineup. You know, he has his doubters in most leagues, so his shine on his trade value, you know, isn't really that brilliant, you know. What about you? Like, if would you be trying to trade for him, given, you know, the Statcast numbers and the BABIP?
I think we're kind of in the same boat. Like, if you have him, you ride the wave, but I don't think I'm looking to acquire him. I just don't think this keeps going this well for that much longer.
Yeah.
Another player that's getting added in a lot of leagues is Akil Baddoo from Detroit. The worrying thing for me with him, that's kind of like my signal that this is going to tail off, is that there's 50% of his contact is soft contact.
Yeah.
The home run to fly ball rate is 50%. That's another guy that's going to drop to 15, 20%. You know, the home runs are going to tail off. And then the plate discipline numbers are bad.
Yeah.
I am not even adding him in leagues. What about you?
Well, early on in his really storybook start and for the week last week, I was staring at him and I wanted to grab him so bad. And then every time I looked, he just kept lighting, you know, he hits another homer, he walks off, he wins a game, you know. And I kind of still regret it momentarily, but like you said, terrible plate discipline. You know, what he has going for him, though, is he's a Rule 5 guy on a bad team, so you know he's going to play. But the thing about that is the longer he plays, the more data is available to expose his weaknesses. And, you know, this is the MLB. They're not going to go easy on you. They're going to exploit you as soon as they can. So I'm rooting for the kid. It's been fun watching him play. But I don't expect the production to continue at this rate.
And then Toronto pitcher Steven Matz is off to a good start. He's picked up two wins. He's got a 9.5 strikeout per nine rate. The walk rate is pretty consistent, just under three, and that's consistent with the last three seasons. But the BABIP is super low. And for pitchers, right, the low BABIP is the sign that they're getting lucky. And, you know, it's a sign that we might see the ERA coming up soon. Mm. I'm not surprised he won the game against Texas. I'm more impressed with the game against the Angels, but I just really don't get the hype with him all of a sudden. You know, he's a streamer to me. Like, he's a guy I'll talk about in the streaming section of the podcast.
For you know, sure.
I'm definitely not playing him against every offense. Where do you stand on him?
No, I mean, I've been on and off the Mets train for a few years now. I kind of feel like I'm having deja vu a bit. I mean, last year to start 2020, Steven Matz had a great first start. Six innings, two hits, seven Ks and one earned run and against the Braves. And I came out of that start last year and I was like, oh yeah, here we go. I was grabbing him everywhere. Then the rest of the year, he finished with an 11.68 ERA, 13 homers over 24.2 innings. I mean, but that's last year, you know. I'm with you on this one. I like the start against the Angels. It buys them another opportunity in my eyes. But the BABIP is going to catch up to them. It's based off opponents, you know.
And another very widely added player is Reds infielder Jonathan India. He's off to a good start, but he doesn't hit for power. He's not walking. BABIP's inflated. He doesn't hit the ball hard. He hits a lot of grounders. You know, he's kind of middle of the pack in plate discipline numbers. He really doesn't fit the profile of players I typically target. Yeah. Where do you stand on Jonathan India?
Yeah, this is another one of those guys with prospect pedigree. That's kind of lost a little bit of shine over time. I think he was a top five pick. I think he may even be third overall the year he was drafted. I think it's too early to really make a call on him. I'm definitely intrigued by him. If I had him, I'm definitely holding on to him, but he's not a guy I'm looking to trade for right now.
Then we have a couple players who are getting dropped all over the place. So Yankees starting pitcher Domingo Germán is one of the most dropped players. He's had two rough starts, one against Tampa, the other against Toronto. Those are two really tough offenses. I'm not sure I would be dropping him quite yet. He's given up too many home runs, but you know, and that's something that you have to imagine is going to even out as the season goes on. The BABIP's at 348, that's going to even out a little bit. And I would expect to see a drop in ERA. For somebody who didn't pitch last season, the velocity looks good. That doesn't seem to be the issue. I'm not giving up on him yet. If I had him, I would hang on to him. Maybe I wouldn't throw him out against every matchup, but I don't think he should be one of the most dropped players in the game right now.
No way. I mean, if that guy's available, I think you jump on him. You know, 2019 was such a good year for him that he definitely warrants a longer lease than just two starts this season. Though I just read, it looks like the Yankees are going to skip his next start. They don't need a fifth starter until April 24th against Cleveland. So it's tough if you're in a weekly head-to-head matchup. This guy's not going to contribute this week for sure. But, like you said, the velocity is there, and that would be the main thing I'm concerned about, a guy missing an entire year. But I'll be watching to see the Cleveland start to see if he's made any adjustments.
Yeah, he's apparently getting sent to the alternate site to like work on stuff. So he's got a week or two of time to tinker. So
yeah,
we'll see. Andrew Vaughn is another player getting dropped all over the place too. I don't get that. You know, he's not playing every game right now, but he made it out of spring training as a rookie for a reason. The organization obviously believes in him. The walk rate looks good. It's not like a discipline issue necessarily. The problem to me is that he hasn't been able to elevate any balls. I think I think his launch angle is like 0.6 degrees or something. Like, so he's basically just like hitting it into the ground, and yeah. He hasn't had a fly ball yet. He has not hit a fly ball at all. Every hit he's had has been a grounder or a line drive. And that's just something that it has to change.
Yeah. Let's not kid ourselves. Like, he's going to hit some fly balls soon, you know, but I mean, you've got a unique scenario in the South side with Yermin Mercedes. I mean, that guy is just on another planet right now. He's a machine. And you can't really take that bat out of the lineup. Mercedes has been DHing when everybody thought Vaughn would be DHing. Now everybody thought Vaughn was going to be getting some reps in the outfield. I mean, it might be just the thing with La Russa and thinking, you know, this young kid just needs needs to get his mind together right. But you don't want to be the guy who drops Andrew Vaughn 12 days into the season because you will be regretting it. You'll be kicking yourself down the line for sure.
So we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk pitching and what players might be affected by innings limits this season, right after a word from our sponsor. We've seen a few instances of managers being extra cautious about pitch counts already, even in the first 2-3 starts of the season. One that comes to mind for me is Steven Strasburg the other day, not being able to finish the final inning in a 7-inning doubleheader after dealing the whole game. That game resulted in a loss. They lost the game in the 7th inning. But this is something we've seen here throughout the season early across the board. Obviously, part of it is the shortened season last season. There's two big questions that come to my mind right away. Do you think this is a trend that we're going to see through the rest of the season? And then what are some of the fantasy ramifications, fantasy baseball ramifications to this?
Yeah, I believe we were always destined to see a quick leash for pitchers at the start of this season. What I'm really interested to see is how many teams tinker with these tandem starter concepts, having pitchers go, you know, two guys go 3 to 5 innings each, and then you leave it up to matchups for the bullpen guys. I noticed the Rangers were doing that a little bit last week, and seeing how the game has progressed recently, I could see that approach gain traction in the future. It's a copycat league. I know they say that about football, but you look at what the Rays have been doing recently, and now you see the league growing into that, you know, across the board. So, I mean, things are changing for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if it works, people are going to want to do it. And, yeah, you know, to your point, the whole openers thing, like, that's going to be something that maybe teams start doing a little bit more widely this year. You know, those tandem starters having a bullpen game,
yeah,
right? Those are things I think that we're going to start kind of seeing a bit throughout the season. And another factor that I think is going to play a big part in fantasy baseball leagues is a drop off in quality starts and or wins. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, last year is a death blow to the quality start. I mean, it was a start that was already marching the plank in recent years. But looking at how consistent the decline has been over the last few years, just listen to these numbers. I mean, back in 2014, 54% of starts were quality starts in 2014. Then you notice each year at least a decline in 3% steadily, consistently each year. So it goes from 54% down to 50%, so on and so forth. To 2019, we're looking at only 37% of the starts made in Major League Baseball are quality starts. That is, in a 5-year span, a 17% drop off. I mean, this is a foregone conclusion. The quality start will be gone forever. And imagine that was from 14 to 19 when we played 162 games every year. Now imagine what it's going to look like after a 60 game season. I mean, it's going to be brutal.
Yeah. And so strategy wise, I think this makes streaming pitchers really, really important this year, finding value on the waiver wire, looking for guys with good matchups who, you know, are consistently going 6 innings, 7 innings, even in games is going to help you a lot. I also think for points leagues or leagues that value wins versus quality starts, finding those like middle relievers, like a Ryan Weathers is, you know, who's going to pick up multiple innings, like 2-3 inning games. Junior Guerra of the Angels, Sean Newcomb in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I think those guys are going to be super, super valuable this year. And we're seeing it already. There's a ton of relievers that have picked up wins already.
Yeah.
Because they're getting thrown in for like 1 1/3, 2 1/3 innings.
Yeah.
And, you know, now there's going to be guys who are like impervious to innings limits. You have your Lance Lynn, your Max Scherzer, those workhorses that, you know, the coach is going to come in the seventh inning when they're at like 95 pitches, and Max Scherzer is going to look at Davey Martinez and go, nope, and yeah, send him right back. let me finish this inning, bro. But, you know, you have those guys, but I do think this is absolutely a trend that you have to watch.
Yeah, I mean, workhorses definitely become the most valuable commodity in some, maybe most leagues, because they are a dying breed, unfortunately.
So let's wrap up with looking at some pitchers who you should be streaming in the week ahead.
Am I streaming?
So Tyler Molly has a good matchup against the Giants today. So I would be looking into him. Jake Odorizzi, he has a good start Sunday against Seattle. Obviously, he's coming off of like not being picked up for a while. I think he had an injury he was recovering from. So, you know, it's kind of a gamble, but he's got a good game against Seattle. And then he has a good start the following week as well. Andrew Haney is another good matchup play this week against Kansas City.
Yeah, this is the time of year to really kind of reach for those guys that you hope are gonna click, and you got them off the waiver wire and you can ride them the rest of the year. This guy's a little heavier owned than most, but Sean Manaea, if he's floating around on your waiver wire, I really like his matchup against the limp lineup of the Detroit Tigers. That should probably be Friday, and it's going to be at home in Oakland. I am also absolutely loving what I saw in Trevor Rogers, 10 Ks against the Mets last weekend. He's tossing the pill on Thursday against the Braves, and this is the guy. Like, if he has another dominant start, you're not going to see him on the waiver wire again. So, yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
We might be talking about him in the most added section.
Oh, yeah.
Next week.
Absolutely.
We'll be back next Wednesday with more fantasy baseball for you. We'll have some more data by next week and can use the sabermetrics a little more effectively for evaluation. So make sure you've subscribed so you're notified when those episodes publish. I'm so happy to have Matt on board, and I hope we can continue this going forwards. It was really fun. I hope you guys enjoyed it as well. If you want to get more info from me, I'm currently writing baseball, fantasy baseball, and baseball betting articles for thegameday.com. So you can check out my articles there. I wrote a bunch of stuff in March. I'll be writing DFS articles going forwards and, you know, other topics as well. I'm going to be using the website Monkey Knife Fight for some articles, which is a combination of daily fantasy and prop betting. So if that's something you're interested in, again, make sure to check out thegameday.com. And then check out creativesports2.com. That's the number 2. I have a column there called 3 Strikes. A new column will be out tomorrow. Finally, please give the show a 5-star rating. Each high rating helps move this podcast up the list on all the podcast platforms when people search for fantasy baseball. So something that really helps me out. Follow the show on Instagram at Fastball Fantasy Baseball. Follow us on Twitter at Fastball Pod. Reach out. Let me know you're listening. I'm really interactive on social media, and I'll answer questions if you send them. So again, please feel free to reach out. You can email the show at fastballfantasybaseball@gmail.com as well. I will reply. Thanks for listening.